Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Good morning, everybody. It's that middle of the month. Better watch your speed today. Oops, did I say that? Well, good morning. This is Bob Salter. On our program this morning, we should have a very interesting discussion. Good guest is with us for both hours of our program, and it's a topic that we're going to explore that we have never gone into in detail on this program. This topic has been explored on other shows, obviously on WFAN, and is an appropriate discussion, to say the least. Joining us in our program today is a personal injury attorney who is based here in New York. His name is Paul Edelstein, and Paul is joining us to talk with us about the topic of what has come to be known by the acronym of CTE. CTE, you just say that name and that usually gets an immediate reaction. And in many cases, that reaction from athletes, from coaches, is stunned silence. In some cases, it is in the area of fear. Paul, first of all, good morning. Welcome to our program on The Fan.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's nice to have you join us. There are many different areas to go in discussion, and we'll get into talking about your involvement with this topic and this area in a couple of different ways in the course of our discussion. We'll also try and work in some thoughts from some of the people listening to us if they are on point with things that we are talking about. But I always like to start as simply as possible. How do you explain what CTE is?
Well, CTE is an abnormal finding in brains that has been discovered only after the death of people. Medicine hasn't been able to figure out how to discover it before examining a brain after a person's death. It's a protein that's being found in brains that's not found in brains without some type of damage, and it's really linked to dementia and ALS type of symptoms. So to sort of alternate brain findings, traumatic brain injury, essentially. And it's being found predominantly in brains of athletes, in this case, most likely football, most of the time football players, people that have had repetitive hits to the head. So it's a scary kind of finding when you link it with athletics or contact sports that involve hits to the head, predominantly football.
And obviously, you know, when you say sports that can involve hits to the head, natural thoughts go to things like boxing, even some of the MMA activity, too, I'm assuming can fall into that category.
No question. I mean, well, that's how I became more familiar with it, other than just an average fan or reader. Mm-hmm. We learned a lot about it, obviously, through our participation in a case that involved a boxer, and then learned a lot about it through MMA and some of the rules and regulations. You know, we learned it as attorneys out of necessity, representing somebody that has a brain injury. I think a lot of people are unfortunately going to learn about it, not connected to it as in a professional sense as an attorney, but maybe personally. And there are a lot of people out there, a lot of clients of mine, a lot of families of clients of mine that, while maybe don't understand CTE, unfortunately have had to deal with TBI on relatives or children.
Paul, I think we started to lose you a little bit there. You said a lot of people have had to deal with TBI, with TBI, of course, being traumatic brain injury, I guess, family members or the like. We're talking with personal injury attorney Paul Edelstein, and he is talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. I'm Bob Salter. By the way, this day, from the standpoint of Major League Baseball, is being observed as Jackie Robinson Day, and there's going to be thoughts on this expressed on WFAN throughout the day. We'll share some thoughts with you in the course of our time with you this morning. Paul, you were saying before we lost our connection that, you know, some people have had the experience of having a family member, a loved one, dealing with TBI or traumatic brain injury. So that may be something that they're more familiar with as opposed to CTE, which obviously is something that has impacted a lot of those in the athletic world, too. And, you know, when we talk about this, you used a term earlier in our discussion of saying that it's kind of a scary thing to talk about from the standpoint of those who participate in athletics, largely, I guess, because there is no way to diagnose CTE. Is that right?
At this point, unless you see signs and symptoms of a brain injury, of a TBI on someone, mm-hmm. you can't know that they're walking around with CTE. It's something that's diagnosed through examining brains after a person's death. So yeah, you're not going to go to a doctor's office and get a blood test and have a doctor tell you you're suffering from CTE. Mm-hmm. Nor do we really know how to treat it if you do have it, because medicine is not diagnosing people with it while they're walking around.
Okay, let's talk a little bit, since you alluded to this earlier, about how it is that you started to learn about this. Obviously, this was in your line of work. Talk with us, if you would, about this case that really, I guess, got your firm introduced in a big way to CTE.
Well, I mean, first, we had represented a lot of people with TBI before we represented Magomed Abdulsalamov, this boxer. So we knew a lot about brain injury. I think a lot of personal injury attorneys know a lot about brain injury, and we have to, unfortunately. We then represented Magomed, who was a Russian boxer who had a heavyweight fight in Madison Square Garden in November 2013. The fight went the distance with a Cuban fighter named Mike Perez, a 10-round fight. It was a fairly brutal fight in terms of how boxing goes. Mago suffered a fractured zygoma in his face, a bone in his face near his eye. large laceration, and unfortunately had a subdural hematoma. So he had a brain bleed that clearly came about as a result of the fight at some point during the fight, although there's no way to know exactly when. Unfortunately, after the fight, the fight doctors, the ringside physicians that were there that really only have one responsibility, or two, watch both fighters, make sure they don't have any injuries that could result in permanent damage. None of them thought that the injuries were significant enough to send Mago to a hospital where a brain injury could have been ruled out, or in this case, they would have discovered it if they would have given him a diagnostic test, which couldn't be done at Madison Square Garden. So they advised him he was fine. He can go to the doctor the next day. There wasn't anything of an urgent or emergent nature at Madison Square Garden. And unfortunately, the brain injury that he had started to manifest itself in symptoms. He started to deteriorate while at the Garden. And outside the Garden, he started vomiting and having real significant problems. His entourage, his handlers and trainers, mostly from Russia, didn't really know what to do. They ended up in a yellow taxi trying to go to a hospital in Manhattan on a Saturday night. And by the time they got there, it was too late to prevent permanent brain damage. And that kind of connects up to what you and I are talking about. And when you have a brain injury of really any level, it can result in really significant findings from what death being one of them, obviously, or from what Magomed has, which is just a severe disability and real permanent neurological impairment, or something much more subtle, like you get headaches or you're moody. You have a lot of personality change. And that's what a lot of families deal with on a daily basis. And that's a real tragedy of TBI, which I think it's a good thing to get the word out there a little bit more, kind of like what you're doing today and what a lot of people are doing connected to CTE.
Hmm. In Mago's case, how long a procedure was it in terms of the court process and before you actually wound up with a settlement?
Well, that's a good question because the court process is not yet complete. Part of the process was complete. The state of New York was a defendant in the case.
Mm-hmm.
And attorneys for the state of New York from the attorney general's office, most prominently the attorney handling the case, whose name was Ross Herman, handled the case with incredible amount of empathy and professionalism. And because they handled the case that way, the attorney general's, the case was resolved against the state of New York in a fairly expeditious manner. Cases take a long time, but it was after all the discovery was complete that they came to the table quite early and said, let's sit down, let's work this out, and they did. And there was a large settlement with the state of New York for $22 million, which was the biggest settlement on behalf of one personal injury client from the state of New York in a case like this. So the case against the state resolved. But the individual ringside physicians who are represented by medical malpractice insurance carriers and their attorneys have not resolved the case. So the case is still remains open against these three physicians, which personally, from an attorney standpoint, we're happy about because we think we're going to get a chance to try that part of the case in open court and hopefully have the media, someone like you, pay attention. ESPN has paid close attention to the case. And then it could put a little spotlight on the safety deficiencies in boxing and MMA by getting a case to open court. So these three physicians with their malpractice insurance carriers haven't made an offer on the case to settle it at all. And the case is proceeding to trial. It will reach trial in Brooklyn in Kings County Supreme Court either sometime in the summer or September. And it'll be really interesting to see how they could justify their actions that night, because obviously the state of New York felt it had 22 million reasons that they felt differently.
Mm. A lot to talk about in this discussion. We're talking with Paul Edelstein. Paul is a personal injury attorney. He is talking with us in both hours of our program this morning, talking about CTE. And we've really just begun our discussion. We'll get into talking about some of the efforts in terms of Mago's Law as well in this discussion. And I mentioned, too, that if folks are on point with things that we are talking about and want to join our discussion, you can at any point during our program today, because Paul's with us for both hours of our program this Sunday morning. In our program this morning, we're talking about the topic of CTE, and joining us on our program is personal injury attorney Paul Edelstein. He has shared some thoughts with us at the beginning of our discussion. what we had shared with you early on was about this unfortunate experience that his client, who is a Russian boxer, had experienced back in 2013 in a fight at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, the $22 million settlement that resolved part of the legal case, you know, as I sit here and think about that, and I'm assuming some of the people who are listening to our discussion today think about it, you think of that price tag, but you also think of what this man and his family have gone through. Can you put that in perspective for us?
Can I? No. I think you're going to have to ask his wife. I've never lived with anybody in my house.
Yeah, I guess, you know, for those of us who haven't lived with somebody, it would be almost impossible to try to understand what it is the person goes through.
It is. It's impossible to understand unless you live with it on a daily basis. I think Mago or someone with a traumatic brain injury like him can put an easy spotlight on it because it's easy for anybody to see somebody in a wheelchair who can't speak and can't care for themselves and say, God, that's got to be incredibly awful for him and for his family to go through. But it's the more subtle TBI cases that are much, much harder to understand when you have a child or a teenager or an adult even, and they have a mild TBI, and that means that their personality changes or their way of thinking changes or they get headaches or they forget things. I mean, the closest thing I can equate to it is maybe if you live with an elderly person, if you have an elderly parent or something like that, and you've known them all your life, and then you're suddenly seeing that they can't function the way they did and need more help. And that is a mild form of, you know, a brain dysfunction. Of course, it's not caused. In most cases, it's degenerative. It's the aging process, but that's sort of a mild version of TBI. But imagine when that happens through somebody's, through some fault of somebody or on a much younger person and happens overnight. Mm. You know, you wake up the next day and you have that.
Mm. No, I can't imagine that because it just sounds like an absolutely horrifying experience and an impossible way to live. What is Mago's Law?
Well, Mago's Law is something that sort of we put out there. Yeah, it's a distillation. So we sort of looked at what was going on with the Athletic Commission rules and regulations for combat fighters, MMA, and boxers, and we said, well, the way to avoid what happened to Mago would be very simple, and it would be to rule out a brain injury of his type. And the only way you can do that, there's only two ways you can do that. And one is through a diagnostic test. So you give the person a CT or an MRI, and you know conclusively there's no brain bleed. If you're not going to do that, then we advocated getting them in a scheme of medical care, much like if they were in an emergency room where they could be observed. So in other words, every single person with a suspected head injury is not going to get an expensive diagnostic test like a CT or an MRI. We understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Although for boxers, we don't have a problem if every one of them did get that because there's so much money involved in boxing and MMA, then why not as a precaution? But if you're not going to give everybody a scan, and every head trauma victim doesn't need a scan, that's totally reasonable. The other thing you can do is wait enough time and have trained medical personnel observe them for enough time so that you can conclusively rule out a brain injury as well. And that happens sort of if you've ever had a kid, you know, like my nephew was injured on a soccer field in Brooklyn in Diker Heights. He collided heads with another soccer player, and firemen, you know, in Brooklyn who were on the sidelines watching, parents and such, they gave my nephew better treatment than Mago got in Madison Square Garden. And in the sense that they took him to the ER, they observed him, they asked him neurological questions, and they observed him for a period of time where it would have been obvious after enough time that he had or didn't have a possible brain bleed, and then you could give him an MRI. So Mago's Law is essentially two things. Rule out the real dangerous brain injury like Mago had, either by way of giving somebody a CT or MRI right away, then you know. If you're not going to do that, keep them in a medical setting where you can observe them over a period of time. they're called serial assessments. That's what the doctors call them. But essentially, if it were you and I and we didn't know what was going on, you'd be waiting in an examining room in an ER, let's say, and you'd say to yourself, geez, where's the doctor? He was here 15 minutes ago. What's going on? Why am I waiting here? Well, guess what? You're waiting there on purpose. You're waiting there so they can see if there's a change in your condition, and they're going to come back, and they're going to ask you another series of neurological questions, and they're going to know if your symptoms have changed. So Magno's Law is essentially those two things. Do one or the other. Either keep the person in your observation with neurologists who can see if there's been a change in circumstances, or get them to a place where there can be a CT or an MRI to rule it out. They didn't do either thing in Mago's case, and now I got a guy in a wheelchair who's never going to get out of it. And that's just tragic.
So in terms of Mago's Law, is the desire to have this be formal legislation? And if so, what's that process like?
Yeah, we'd like to see it be formal legislation in New York, but really nationally. One of the problems you have with boxing is that there's no standardized federal regulation. It's statewide. And so when you have that, you don't have consistency in the regulation. So we'd like to see it go national. It's obviously not very complicated. We're really just saying treat these guys like emergency room patients, which is essentially what they are. And anybody that got in a car accident and walked out of a car and looked like Mago did, or any of these other boxers or MMA fighters, would be, if they went into an emergency room, they'd be kept there for a little while just to make sure, or they'd be given a CT. So it's a simple regulation that we'd like to see done. To get it passed, you really need to get legislators in New York behind it. You need to get politicians behind it. You need to get sort of a groundswell for support. And then it goes through a political process of debate, gets into a legislative floor, and we don't really see a reason why something like this shouldn't be a part of athletic commission rules and regulations, particularly in a sport that generates so much money for the state of New York. It doesn't seem to make sense. There were certain laws that were changed as a result of Magno's fight, but the cosmetic, insurance regulations were put in place, because obviously we know there was a huge taxpayer payment on this, and I'm a taxpayer in New York, so I get it. I don't think I should foot the bill for the negligence of these doctors that night. So those kind of things were put out there, definitely as a result of this case. But they don't protect the fighter's safety. So Mago's Law or something like it would.
Well, is there, you talk about the idea of there being a need for political backing to obviously get legislation moving and ultimately to get it adopted and into law. Is there any sort of movement backing for that?
There is some movement. We have some senator in Brooklyn who seems to be interested. The biggest way to get movement is through what I'm doing right now. I mean, if the press reports on this, and ESPN has really been a big component of this, and some of the New York papers, the New York Times, if they put it out there, there'll be more support for it. And then the other thing that can sort of push this kind of legislation lawsuit, that's so unfortunate that sometimes it has to be a byproduct of someone like me coming in and suing a state of New York to say, let's change something for the better. As a personal injury lawyer, we do believe in that what we do has two effects. One, we can help our clients and their families. But the secondary effect that all of us really believe in is that what we do can effectuate change on a greater good, a societal type of change, if we see something that can be changed. And this is an area that we think can easily be changed. Not to anybody's detriment. I mean, what would be so hard by saying, all combat participants in boxing or MMA at the end of a fight either have to be in an ER or be in that kind of setting or remain at the arena for a certain period of time before they're discharged, or the alternative is get a CT or an MRI so that we know you don't have this. How hard would that be? Anyway, all you have to do is hold these guys' checks back. And so you're not going to get paid tonight until you've been here for a certain period of time. Right. And I know you don't have a brain injury.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when you talk about the idea of, needing to build a groundswell of support for this, I understand the importance of media coverage. I can understand the importance of legislators stepping up in this. But you also need basically public support for it, too. it would seem almost illogical to think that there would be anybody who would really be opposed to this. Or am I wrong?
Well, everybody has an opinion. But most of the opinions I've heard align with what you're saying. Like, what would be so wrong with doing this? One opinion that we've heard, and we've heard it from the lawyers on the other side of our case, is, what do you want? And they put.
Oops, we're losing you there, Paul. We didn't catch the last part. You said the lawyers on the other side of the case, and then the line seemed to pass on us there. Okay, all right, so I'm going to have to reconnect with Paul. Let me mention the fact that you can listen to WFAN anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app and favorite us today. And if you have Alexa, you just say, play WFAN Sports Radio 101.9 FM or play WFAN Sports Radio 66, and you'll be locked into the Fan. Hi there, Alexa. WFAN's toll-free line, you want to join our discussion today, 877-337-6666. We are in a discussion with our guest on our program this morning. He is a personal injury attorney here in New York. Paul Edelstein is talking with us. We've been talking about this topic of CTE, and that's our plan, is to talk about this topic for both hours of our program this morning. Paul is sharing some information with us on this case and talked a little bit about this proposal for Mago's Law as well. This, in the Major League Baseball circles today, is known as Jackie Robinson Day. And this, of course, is the 71st anniversary today of Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier. So there are going to be players, managers, coaches, and umpires wearing Jackie Robinson's number 42 today to signify that Jackie Robinson Day today in Major League Baseball. Now, before we lost you, you mentioned the fact that attorneys on the other side were saying, and then the call dropped. So what were they saying?
Well, you know, we've heard blowbacks on the other side saying, what do you want us to do, give an MRI or a CT to every boxer that comes out? That's impractical. Now, The answer to that is, one, what would be so wrong with that? I mean, then we would know for sure. But from a secondary perspective, we've also advocated, well, if you're not going to give them a diagnostic test to rule out a brain injury, you could at least observe them for a period of time. You could wait for this period of time, sort of golden hour in medicine. And after that point, the odds of them having a brain injury are dramatically lower. So if you wait a certain period of time and there are no neurological findings on someone with a head trauma after a period of time, the odds of them having a brain bleed that could kill them or cripple them are way, way lower. So it's really just do one of those two things. What's so wrong with that? So you're right. I don't understand what would be the opposition other than just inertia.
Very interesting statement. Paul Edelstein talking with us on our program on Fan this Sunday morning. He's a personal injury attorney. He's with us for both hours of our show. I said you want to join us in our discussion, you can. 877-337-6666 is our number. We're talking about this topic of CTE. We've got more to get to in discussion. I want to follow up on some of the things that Paul has mentioned as well. Thus far in our chat, and talk more about CTE as we continue in our chat this Sunday morning.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
It's Sunday morning on WFAN. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in a discussion on our program this morning talking about CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, a degenerative brain disease. And we're talking with somebody who has become an expert on this topic. He's a personal injury attorney, and he's joined us for both hours of our program this morning. Paul Edelstein is talking with us on our program, and he shared an awful lot thus far in our discussion. One of the things that I was thinking, Paul, and I don't believe we've touched upon this, you know, our focus has been talking about athletes, including your client with CTE. You've touched a little bit on TBI, traumatic brain injury. What about military veterans? Do they experience CTE?
Sure. Anybody that has a repetitive head injury, mm-hmm. anybody can experience CTE or any kind of mild form of TBI. So it's not restricted to, obviously, to athletes or combat participants in reality or in sport. And but the symptoms of it are the real problem. And the milder ones are the ones that are particularly difficult for friends and family. You know, I'm sitting here, I changed phones for you, and so it's been a little frustrating for 45 minutes, right, that have kind of had the line drop, and you and I have been interrupted. Well, think about if that happened on a daily basis for you as a person, for you and your family. If you had that kind of disconnect with finding your keys or in the middle of a conversation you lost your train of thought, think about how it's been a little bit frustrating for me on the phone. I'm sure it is for you as a host. It probably happens all the time to have to deal with that. Think about that if you woke up the next day and all of a sudden you had frequent episodes of this kind of disconnect. That's what it's like in a mild sense.
And again, like we said earlier, for most people, most of us, we're going to find it frustrating. We'd find it difficult to understand. And one of the first thoughts we would have is, how on earth can somebody exist like this? Because, you know, as you said earlier, too, and it's real frustrating to think about it, there's no way to diagnose this.
And no, but you can prevent it, some of it.
That's the tricky area here, okay, is you can prevent some of it. Two questions with that. Number one, how? And then number two, where are we in terms of preventing it in the areas, the ways that we actually can?
Well, I mean, that's the real question, because you can't prevent it for a soldier who experiences a head trauma on a battlefield. You can't prevent it from somebody that falls down and hits their head or is in a car accident. But if you can prevent it in other areas, wouldn't you want to? If this is such a tragic outcome that we all agree we don't want to experience on a mild or extreme level like my client, then shouldn't we do everything we can to prevent that situation from happening? And you certainly can by changing rules and regulations in athletics to deal with it. And some sports have and some haven't.
Outside of rules and regulations, is there actual equipment that's needed to be changed?
Well, I mean, boy, the NFL has spent a lot more money than time than I have to research that. So I imagine they've done everything they can to make the helmets as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to some extent, when you're doing this kind of stuff, it's just like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, right?
Right, right.
I mean, it may not be enough, or it probably is not going to be enough, especially with CTE, which is not really from the medicine that's coming out connected to concussions, and that's sort of the disconnect that was there. Like, oh, well, let's try to prevent concussions, we'll prevent CTE. It seems like that's not the real connection. It's just repetitive head trauma that may not even rise to the level of a concussion. And if you have these repeated head traumas of really any degree, the repetitive nature of them is what we're seeing linked to CTE from these studies, predominantly the Boston University study that came out. So you're going to have to prevent the head contacts as much as you can in order to lower the risk of CTE appearing later on.
Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of parents, grandparents, in some cases coaches, listening to our discussion today, and you think of young players, young athletes coming along, and their potential exposure to this from repeated head trauma, it's got to be frustrating for them, because it's like, what do you do? I mean, do you get to a point
where... Well, it's a choice you have to make, I guess. But in order for you to make the choice, you've got to have a complete, you know, breadth of information in front of you before you go ahead and do it. So, for instance, like we're sitting here right now, and if you and I were talking about smoking cigarettes, I think we would say, "What? That's insane. Why? You know, why would anybody smoke a cigarette?" And some people will choose to smoke a cigarette, but at least those people sitting here today in this time period in 2018 know all the risks associated with it, and they say, okay, well, I understand the risks, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. The problem with CTE and contact sports is we're sort of in the infancy stage, I think, of the general public understanding the implications of what they're doing. So 30 or 40 years ago, if we had the same discussion that we're having right now about cigarettes, what do you do? Most people would say, what are you talking about? They wouldn't know the implications, the negative implications of smoking. In fact, it was put out there back then as a positive. Oh, it'll help you. You'll be vibrant. You'll be energetic. It was like a good thing. And now the mental view of this, we all know from everything we've learned that it's actually the opposite. Well, the same thing might be happening now with CTE and head trauma in sports, where 20, 30, 40 years from now, we might look back and say, wow, why in the world would we have permitted this to happen, knowing what we know? We're just starting to get there now, and we may look back on it, much like we look back at the tobacco industry now and say, well, we know a lot more now, so we would go about things differently.
Are there, in other states, similar discussions being held on this topic?
Oh, absolutely, Dave. You know, we have seen... You know, it's easy to do the research now, obviously, with the internet, and this is a discussion that's going on all over the place. There are various rule changes in contact football at lower levels to reduce the instances of head trauma. Even the NFL has limited, contact and practices and things like that, which will reduce the volume, the repetitive nature of the head injuries. So you're absolutely starting to see it. There's been a recommendation that there not be contact in football below the high school level. You know that you don't have the hitting that's going on below the high school level. Obviously, anything that reduces the number of times that you have a head trauma is going to reduce your chances of having any type of TBI, including CTE.
Interesting discussion we're having with Paul Edelstein on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. You want to join us in our discussion, WFAN's toll-free line, 877-337-6666. It is brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MoheganSun.com. And we're talking about this topic of CTE and head traumas, repetitive head traumas. Let's start with folks on the phone, and we'll start in New Jersey. Let's go over to Jay in Bergen County. Jay, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Always an interesting show.
Thank you.
Mr. Edelstein, unfortunately, with this Russian boxer that you say, you know, the care wasn't there for him, I mean, do they have, would they have MRIs there at the Garden like they do, say, in the Giants? Locker room or Yankees clubhouse?
They did not have an MRI machine at Madison Square Garden. I'm not aware that they have an actual MRI machine at Yankee Stadium or anything like that.
I believe they do because somebody got injured the other day and they said they had an MRI and it was negative.
During
the game.
They definitely did not have one at Madison Square Garden that night. But that's a great question that you asked, though, also, because can you imagine, you know, Aaron Judge having an injury in a Yankee game and not being sent for an MRI, either if it was at Yankee Stadium or more likely in an emergency room? Is that even possible for that to happen? And yet that's what happened to my guy in the world's most famous arena. So that's a real problem in the case itself.
Now, also, this bare-knuckle boxing, this McGregor who threw the hand truck through the window, I mean, he's got to have a couple spark plugs missing already.
A lot of people have asked me that lately about McGregor and whether I think it's connected to CTE, and it's either that or it's part of the show, right? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to know that the guy's taken so much head trauma that it's affecting his behavior to some degree, but it also wouldn't surprise me to think that, hey, maybe this is all part of the marketing in terms of the sport. I don't know. Without you got to do an MRI of the guy's head, I guess.
Yeah, but if this bad knuckle boxing is going to, it's violent. I mean, you're going in there, you're being kicked in the head, punched in the head repetitively. At least in the boxing ring with gloves, there is some kind of cushion. Boxing's been around for years, you know, hundred and fifty years boxing. It started as bad knuckle boxing years ago. But to put yourself in a ring and then want to blame the garden or the state or the city, I think that's, you know, gone a little far to you know, let yourself be kicked in the head repetitively and want to blame somebody but yourself. And
Sure. Now, I mean, obviously this is a common complaint that we've heard about this particular case. What you're talking about is assumption of the risk. Hey, if you go in there and assume the risk, you know, how could you blame somebody thereafter? But in Mago's case, Mago did not assume the risk that after he was going to perform and entertain all the fans at the Garden and everywhere else, that the four trained medical personnel that were there specifically to guard his safety were going to fail him. He didn't assume that risk. And it's not much different than going to a swimming pool and you say, well, I'm going to go swimming today. Me and one other person. Hold on one second, and then I'll tell you. And we're going to go swimming today, but there are going to be four lifeguards, and they're going to watch me. Well, I assume the risk when I go swimming that I may drown, okay? But how do I drown with four lifeguards who are being paid just to watch me? And that's what happened to Mago. So he didn't assume the risk that afterwards that people were going to fail.
How could he have been saved unless there was either, like I said, an MRI or a surgeon there to operate on him immediately? How else could he have been saved?
If he had been put in an ambulance immediately after that fight and gotten right to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital within a few minutes, which is what would have happened, he would have been in the care of competent neurologists, which is not what happened at Madison Square Garden. They would have seen the signs and symptoms. No, he wasn't knocked out. If he was knocked out, by the way, it would have been mandated. He would have immediately went to the hospital. So I think that's kind of silly. If my guy doesn't fall down, he doesn't get to go to the hospital. Think about that. So if he was in the emergency room, he would have been in a scheme of medical care. They would have given him a CT right away. They would have been observing him. They would have seen the signs of this brain injury. And we know how long it took. I don't want to get into the specifics of the medicine with Bago, but we're not afraid to. That had he gotten the surgery earlier, had he been in the care of neurologists earlier, you would have prevented the permanent damage that occurred from this brain injury.
This is a case
where the guy got hit and died right in the ring.
How much time lapsed between him leaving the ring and getting to a hospital and getting an MRI?
Wow, you sound like you're calling from my defense attorney's offices, but these are good questions. How much time from him getting an MRI? Hours. Something
hours.
Like 2.5 hours went by.
Okay.
Between the end of the fight and him being in St. Luke's Roosevelt's emergency room and these guys getting him an MRI. The fight ended at about 10:45. He's in the emergency room, according to their records, at 12:30. That's a long time
Much too long. I see your point there. Well, listen, very good discussion this morning, Bob, Mr. Edelstein. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay.
My pleasure.
You for your call. 877-337-6666. You want to join in the discussion? We're talking with Paul Edelstein on our program on The Fan. He is a personal injury attorney and talking with us about this topic of CTE. And we touched upon TBI as well in the discussion. The link between CTE and death. What is known about that?
And death?
Yes, in terms of...
As far as I know from the research, the link between them is that without death, we would have never known about CTE. Every brain that's been examined from athletes to look for CTE has been on a dead one. So, I mean, I think your question is really, is there some medical link between having CTE and death itself?
Yes. Yes.
And from what I've read in the literature, one hasn't been discovered yet, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And there's been a lot of question as to whether CTE can be linked to the suicides of some of these guys like Junior Seau and Aaron Hernandez, particularly, whose brains were examined and there was significant CTE found. You can't really directly make that link, at least with the medicine that exists right now, and say, well, if you have this level of CTE, you're more likely to either die or kill yourself. But it doesn't seem like an unreasonable presumption to think that that link might ultimately be found.
Should there be more of a a sense of outrage about CTE and the incidence of it in this country?
I think there should be, because and all you'd have to talk to is any family who has a family member with any level of TBI, and ask, and you're going to get that sense of outrage. Could this have been prevented? And every single one of them is going to tell you if there was anything that they could have done to prevent the TBI at any level from happening to their loved one, they would say they would do it. Mago's family, I guarantee you, would give back 100 cents on the dollar of what they received in this lawsuit to say, we would just like him the way he was before. Anything to prevent this from happening. Your brain is just such a sensitive organ, and everything changes here with that. Anybody would want that.
More with Paul Edelstein as we continue on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. After our 8 o'clock update, it is Rick Wolf who's along with the Sports Edge program. Along after our 9 o'clock update this Sunday morning, Ed Randall will be by. He'll be talking baseball, among the things he'll be chatting about today, I'm sure. The 71st anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier. This Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. A lot of observations being shared on The Fan about Jackie Robinson Day today as well. I'm Bob Salter. We're in discussion with personal injury attorney Paul Edelstein. He is talking with us about this topic of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And we try to work in some thoughts from some of the folks listening to us as well in our discussion. There's lots of different areas to go in this chat. WFAN's toll-free line, 877-337-6666. It's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at mohegansun.com. Let's go back to the phone to Kevin in Allentown. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to The Fan. Thanks for holding on so long.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you. Yourself?
I had the privilege of being, my best friend played in the NFL for 11 years, and he was forced to retire because of concussions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you knew the hell that he went through during his career and after his career with sleeping in black rooms and blacking out while we're in the car and stuff, the head trauma is just absolutely disgraceful.
Hmm.
And I bet if he had the choice to make again, he might choose differently. If he knew what we now sort of know, he might.
He has three beautiful kids, and none of them can play football.
That says a lot, right there.
You know, and he was a trooper, and he wouldn't. If they didn't force him to retire from the Jets, he would still have been playing today. You know, that's how tough he was, and the head trauma he's going through now, and. You know, the rest of his life, and there's obviously CTE there. It's really, really awful.
Hmm. And unfortunately, he certainly isn't alone in experiencing that tough situation. Thank you for sharing that with us, and certainly we hope for the best continued for him as he tries to deal with that situation. I mean, you know, you hear situations like that, Paul, and it just breaks your heart. Thinking about what the person goes through. And you know, it's not just the person, it's their family, you know?
Well, that's the tragedy. But these guys didn't know the things that we know right now and we're continuing to know right now. So I think the real tragedy is that people participating in these sports with head trauma, they should do it eyes wide open. They didn't have that opportunity 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. They, just like smokers, didn't know. You know, my mother has emphysema. My kids ask her, well, why would you have smoked a cigarette if you knew it did this to you, and you know, you're going to have all these problems. And my mother's answer is pretty simple. I didn't know. If now, I would never do it. You know, so this is what we're going to start to see with contact sports. More of these stories coming out and more people saying, well, now that I know what I know, I'm going to make a different choice. I'm not going to let my kids play, or I'm not going to play. And that's what you're going to, it's just inevitable that we're going to see this.
And you think of, you know, because this phrase keeps bouncing around in my thought process, this idea of repetitive head trauma, because I just think of how many different people are exposed to that. A lot of different athletes, obviously, and we haven't even mentioned hockey players as well. But, you know, you think about veterans. You also think about something that, again, some people might not like to talk about, but it's a reality. People who have been involved and are victims of domestic abuse, where they, in some cases, may have been exposed to repetitive head trauma. I mean, somebody like that potentially could develop CTE.
Well, that would be a criminal act. These are, you know, these would be affirmative assaults that we have criminal penalties
right.
to try to dissuade people from doing. That's just a horrible thing. Can you prevent that? In some cases, you can't prevent a domestic violence abuse situation, but at least society has said that's completely 100% unacceptable and instituted a severe punishment in the event that happens. I don't know what else you can do as a society to change that and everything that we're seeing, make it unacceptable, completely unacceptable. So that, in that sense, for domestic violence victims, that's what you have. You know, we're talking about, you know, other things when you're talking about sports participants. You want to reduce the amount of repetitive head trauma you have under any circumstances based on the medicine that we know about.
And when we talk about the ways to go about reducing that, one of the things that you've mentioned has been discussed a lot on this station, as you would imagine, is this idea of eliminating contact, specifically usually tackle, football under a certain age. I guess the idea has been floated about eliminating this under high school age. How do you feel about that? Do you think that's a good idea?
It's not just a good idea. It's just the most obvious idea. I mean, you're talking about developing brains at that point, which are far more susceptible to damage, than brains that are further along, in some sense. So I don't know why. I don't know how anyone could argue against that as being a good protective safety measure. It's going to reduce the amount of head trauma that athlete has, number one, because you're not going to have it at below a certain age, and it's going to take out of the equation certain age-developed brains, you know, that lower ones, obviously, from receiving head trauma. So how in the world can that not be a good idea? I don't know. I'd like to hear the argument against that.
Mm. And what does one say to somebody who's had a concussion or, in some cases, a series of concussions, and their natural question comes up, and I'm sure you've probably heard this, am I going to wind up with CTE?
Unfortunately, the medical science that's out there right now says that it's directly related to the number of head traumas you sustain. So that's the correlation that exists from statistically right now. It doesn't guarantee it. It doesn't, and it doesn't mean that you won't get it. I think the best advice somebody's, and I'm just the caveman lawyer. That's what people think about us. But we know a lot about the medicine. But a competent neurologist, I'm sure, is going to advise that patient to the extent of you just can't have any more head traumas. No more head traumas on top of what you already have. That's the best preventative measure anyone could take.
Hmm. And then the other aspect of this in the world in which we live, because there's been so much that has been done with medicine over the years. A lot of people expect that someday there is going to be some sort of treatment or medical approach to CTE. What is being done in terms of study of this topic?
Well, the most competent study is this Boston University study, you know, by Dr. Ann McKee. But all that's really geared towards is identifying some kind of connection between it. It's not at all geared towards treatment of it. But, you know, there's a lot of research and a lot of money being dedicated to treating dementia and Alzheimer's. I mean, this is a major, major issue in our society from a personal health consequence and cost, and also from an economical standpoint. I mean, we know how much money this costs society as a whole to treat our elderly population that suffers from dementia and Alzheimer's and these related diseases. So there's already an incredible amount of attention, effort, and money being spent to try to deal with that. CTE is going to fall right into that category. So, you know, hopefully that, you know, that'll happen. But, I mean, if you think about it, it's like, well, what can you do? Well, you can't prevent, we don't know how to prevent Alzheimer's and dementia right now, you know, with limited success. But CTE, as it relates to repetitive head trauma, that's not much different than looking at somebody who's, smoking cigarettes and that person saying, well, you know, they're probably going to come up with a cure of cancer at some point. I mean, or you can put down the cigarette, right? You can stop that. That might increase your odds of not developing cancer and emphysema and these things. So same thing for CTE and head trauma. Well, maybe there'll be a competent way to deal with dementia, Alzheimer's, and all these kind of things, and CTE-related and TBI-related symptoms and problems. But until I wouldn't wait for that day. I think you're better off saying, I'm going to try to limit my chances of being in that category of person that needs this treatment. How do you do that? It's not a popular answer when we're talking about sports, right?
No, it's not.
Don't have a head trauma.
It's not a popular answer. I mean, can you imagine the day where there would not be boxing as we know it today or MMA?
Yeah, I can. I mean, because I can imagine the day where there'll be, you know, nobody walking around smoking cigarettes. You know what? Here's a good example in the sports world. There was a time where hockey fans and hockey owners could not imagine the day that hockey players would be forced to wear helmets. I mean, we all remember Ron Duguay skating around, and the hockey owner said, if you put a helmet on these guys, the sport will end as we know it. It'll change. So nobody could imagine. There was a time where hockey owners and fans said we could not foresee the day that our players will be required to wear helmets. Yet that's exactly what happened, and the sport didn't suffer. Same thing happened with respect to really fighting and that aspect of hockey and the goonish aspect of hockey. Owners and fans at one point had the, and not that long ago, had the attitude of, I can't foresee a day where this doesn't exist because then the sport will be completely different and it'll fail. Well, what happened? The hockey adapted, changed, and it's still thriving. So I mean, we may see the same type of thing. Again, we're sort of at the tip of the iceberg in understanding the connections between repetitive head trauma and CTE, and unfortunately boxing, MMA, and clearly the NFL are really in the forefront of this discussion.
Paul Edelstein is talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Ed Randall's Talking Baseball is along after our 9 o'clock update on The Fan this Sunday morning. This is the 71st anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier. Jackie Robinson Day today in Major League Baseball. That's some of what Ed will be talking about on Talking Baseball this morning, undoubtedly. After our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program. I'm Bob Salter. We're talking about the topic of CTE and talking about that with Attorney Paul Edelstein. He has joined us for our entire program this morning. What I've mentioned as well is if you want to join us in our discussion, 877-337-6666 is our phone number. If you want to share some thoughts along the lines of the things we've been talking about, we also talked a little bit earlier in our discussion about a legislative approach to this that I want to be able to touch upon again because we kind of mentioned that early in this discussion. And I also want to talk about what role you see for
the public in the approaches to dealing with a CTE. But let's go back to the phones. 877-337-6666 is our phone number. Let's see. We're going to, where are we headed next? To Bill in West Windsor, New Jersey. Bill, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And yourself?
Good, thanks. I have a question. The studies that have done so far with NFL players and others, we understand what the results have been thus far. Have there been any similar studies in rugby? You know, a sport that's similarly violent, but no pads, no hard plastic helmets that obviously we've seen become weapons. I want to see if have there been any studies done there?
There's none that I'm aware of with rugby players. Unfortunately, what you have to have is you have to have somebody donate their brain to
right.
be studied after their death, and then know that they participated in one of these sports. So there's no study out there that I'm aware of that was specifically rugby players. The most prominent studies, you know, the Boston University study involved football brains of football players post death, and that also started with teenagers. That they had some teenagers' brains that died in accidents that suffered traumatic brain injury within certain periods of time prior to their death. So that was a connection. Okay, we have young people who died and had sustained head trauma within 2 weeks, 2 months, 6 months of a death. They looked at those brains to see if there was some correlation between the head trauma and CTE findings, this protein called tau, this finding there. Nothing specific for rugby players. It's really head trauma and then football players with this BU study.
Got it. All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Interesting point that you raised, Bill. Stay on the phones at 877-337-6666. That's our number here at The Fan. We go to Tony, who's calling us from California. Where in California are you?
Laguna Niguel.
Well, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. I'm going to ask the question, then I'm going to hang up and listen. And I have a background in medical, and I'm not going to get into the details of that. But when you do some of the research that's out there that's linked to the Boston study, what they're getting on rats and stuff like that is a magnification of the effect of CTE when combined with steroids and HGH. And one of the problems is, in my opinion, there's such a high focus on CTE because that's measurable after the patient dies and you could do the studies. But there's very little information about the steroids and the HGH because it's illegal. They hide that. And that combination of those two is a magnifying effect of CTE, but yet everybody only speaks about the CTE side of it. So if you want to give your comments on that or any knowledge you have about that, I'll jump off. Thank you.
Thank you for your call this morning.
I mean, you're going to have to – that's a pretty speculative assumption, though. The brains that have been analyzed, there's no way to know, all right, these 50 brains came to the – examination having taken steroids and PEDs, so we could factor that into the variable. You'd have to do a completely different study then and say, all right, here's 100 brains of athletes that took steroids, and let's compare them to 100 athletes with head traumas that didn't take steroids. You're never going to be able to get those control groups to rule that out. I mean, the caller may be completely correct. Steroids and these type of PEDs may enhance the risk for CTE. We're never going to know that. But what we do know is that head trauma is directly correlated to it based on these studies. So I don't know that you need to go to the next step. Taking steroids and PEDs as an athlete has already been proven to have negative consequences over and above it, you know, aside rather, from potentially CTE.
All right, back to the phone we go. Let's see. We're going to Michael in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Michael, thanks for holding on so long. Welcome to The Fan. Good morning.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to make a comment that as a youth, my father would not let me or my brothers play football. And you know, we were a little upset about it because we wanted to play. But looking back and after the study of 111 brains and 109 of them having to CTE, I am thrilled that my father did not make us play or did not allow us to play football growing up. So I just wanted to see what you think about mandating it to be flag football until you hit high school and then allowing for contact. I think that's a great idea and that should be implemented. But I'm curious, what's your thought on that?
My personal thought, you can take that. My personal thought is that just like with Mago, with my boxer, why not get an MRI? You know, why not have these preventative measures? I think your idea, why wouldn't you do that? Why not?
Yeah, we actually had touched upon that a little bit earlier, too. Thank you for your call this morning, Michael. Interesting perspective that you are sharing with us. Now, there are people who are just joining us in this discussion, and I want to sort of revisit something that we touched upon in the first hour of our discussion. Briefly, for people who are just coming to the discussion, can you just explain, who MAGO is and what MAGO's law is?
Sure. Magomed Abdulsalamov was a Russian heavyweight fighter. He fought a heavyweight fight in Madison Square Garden in November 2013. It was quite a bludgeoning fight. It went the distance. At the end of the fight, he was examined by various ringside physicians who all felt that he was fine and okay to go home, even though he had a fracture in his face, a severe laceration. He was kind of grotesquely swollen and disfigured from the beating. And unfortunately, he had a subdural hematoma. He had a brain bleed that you really can't conclusively rule out without a CT or an MRI. They sent him home or didn't direct him to an emergency room. He ended up having significant signs and symptoms of brain injury while at the Garden. He was nauseous. He was vomiting. He had severe headache. And ultimately didn't really know exactly what to do and ended up getting in a taxi cab outside of Madison Square Garden on a Saturday night and going to a hospital. This is a guy that, you know, he's not from New York, and his entourage also not from New York, that he really didn't know what to do. By the time he got to the emergency room and the really life-saving staff at St. Luke's Roosevelt were able to get to him and get him a CT and realize he had a brain bleed and deal with it through a surgery, it was too late to really reverse permanent brain damage on him. So that's unfortunately what happened to Magomed. We don't want to see it happen to anybody else in a professional boxing setting, so we've put forth, in addition to litigating on his behalf, a regulation that we think would be much like some of you callers are calling in. Why wouldn't you do some of these things? In other words, mandate that boxers get better care, in that sense, at least be observed for a certain period of time so you can rule out this type of tragic brain injury or get a CT or an MRI right away, which can rule it out. And that's sort of what Mago's law at its essence really is, and what we hope to see happen to protect these guys. If you're going to allow this violent sport, then these guys should get as much protection as they can.
Okay. That's a good way of summing this up for people who are just joining us in our discussion. We're talking with attorney Paul Edelstein on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. You want to join us in the discussion, 877-337-6666 is our phone number. Rick Wolf, Sports Edge, follows our 8 o'clock update. Back to the phone we go to Rob in Lake Success. Rob, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning, Bob. Good morning. I love calling in. I love, especially when it gets into the medical discussions. This is just I love it just so much. I want to just bring a comment, and just I have to agree with you guest, Attorney Edelstein over here, and a lot what he's saying. I think I really missed a lot early part of your show, but the mechanics. Did you discuss a lot of the mechanics on how CT and concussions come and the reasons why they happen? Because I did miss it, but generally speaking, it's repetitive. Like I heard him say, It's repetitive, cumulative head trauma. So any time in a sport or activity, whether it even be just even in a car accident from whiplash, where the head snaps and the brain, it's really a brain bruise, is when the brain, is what sits in the fluid inside the skull, is snapped and bumps up against the skull. It's a bruise. And repetitive bruises is where the problem comes. Now, I heard a gentleman about rugby. And the reason why it probably does not happen in rugby and why we should move in the direction of non-contact at a youth age is because there's no real head trauma in the sense that the head's not snapping. Of course there is. Soccer, the ball is headed a lot of times, and that's going to cause the head trauma because it's a snapping reaction. But in, like, rugby, you try to keep your head out of the way. Heads are not going to butt up on purpose. With football, you see the constant head hit in the lineman play. And when they make a tackle, a lot of times it's just happening. So I totally agree. At the youth level, we must think of for the future to get rid of, make it a non-contact sport. Now, fans are not going to like that. But remember, the most important point I want to bring out here is 1 out of 10,000 kids or athletes at the college level make the professionals. That means there are 9,999, whatever the math is over there, do not make the pros. And these people are going to be going into society for the rest of their lives, not making the dream, and they're going to live their lives potentially with a youth participation and spending the rest of their lives potentially with this disease. And hopefully I've added to your show. I want to hear a comment what you guys have to say on that.
Paul?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you can disagree with that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with putting in preventative measures that reduce the likelihood of this. You know, part of your caller's comment, though, sort of goes to a deeper discussion of CTE as it relates to NFL, and that's the socioeconomic component. You know, who is electing to participate in these sports? Who is the overwhelming majority of persons that are electing to participate in contact sports like this in the hopes of chasing that dream of professional, performance for this and getting paid for this or getting a college scholarship? You know, you're talking about a level of society that economically and from a socioeconomic perspective are more likely to take this risk. Well, that maybe that's something we need to address too, right? You know, that it shouldn't be limited to this segment of society that's willing to take a risk that other people may not because they have more avenues to succeed from a financial perspective. You know, so that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't seem to want to discuss here. Who's playing football? You know, and why, if they know these risks?
Interesting mm-hmm. points. Rob, thank you very much for your call, your patience on the phone this morning, too.
Thank you.
All right. Interesting things being shared by folks listening to us. 877-337-6666 is our phone number here at The Fan. We'll get to more folks in just moments. After our 9 o'clock update this morning, Ed Randall is along talking baseball on The Fan. This is the 71st anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking baseball's color barrier. I mentioned earlier that the number 42 being worn by all players, managers, coaches, and umpires today in Major League Baseball as a way of commemorating Jackie Robinson and what he meant to the game and the importance and significance of what took place 71 years ago today. 71 years ago. My goodness. Stop and think about that, too. Well, we'll continue in our discussion. A lot more to get to, and we'll get to more of your calls as well this Sunday morning. We are in a discussion with Paul Edelstein. He's a personal injury attorney here in New York and talking with us about this topic of CTE. A lot that we have chatted about with folks listening to us. You want to join the discussion, 877-337-6666 is our phone number here at The Fan. Let's go next to Gary from Long Island, who's been holding forever. Thanks for holding on so long, Gary. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you guys for taking my call. The one thing I'd like to talk about is about the NFL and some of the rule changes that they can implement to reduce these jarring hits that leave both the tackler and the tacklee on the floor, and that no doubt result in the concussion protocols that then have to be implemented. You know, very often I'm watching the game, and I'm a fan of football. I've been watching since I was a child. And, you know, when one of my defensive players puts his head down and launches himself like a missile at the ball carrier and then either misses or hits the guy so hard that the guy just bounces off and then runs another 20 yards, and the defensive player or both players end up on the floor, I'm yelling at the TV saying, dude, pick your head up. Wrap the guy up, grab him by the waist, pull him to the ground. It's tackle football. It's not kill him football. I mean, that's sort of the point. And I think the NFL in some ways doesn't do enough because they like these crazy hits that end up on SportsCenter, but that's not what the game is, and you don't need that for the game. And if you made rules where you basically, took those hits out of the game and made it more about actually wrapping the guy up, with your head up, seeing where you're going, I'm not saying you would eliminate the CTE, but it would definitely lessen the effect, because I think that's actually one of the main differences between rugby and the NFL, that in rugby they're wearing a lot less padding, and yes, it is a violent sport, but they're not hitting for the sake of hitting. There's much more grappling and wrapping and tackling that's going on. That's my point. Thank you.
All right, Paul?
Well, I mean, rule changes are good, and I think the NFL, better than any other professional sport, is trying to address this, but to some degree, it's like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. I mean, you can't prevent the sinking, of this boat or CTE altogether unless you're eliminating the repetitive nature of the hits. It's not a popular choice right now, but societal norms change over time for the better. I mean, I keep hearing that it's Jackie Robinson Day, and I can't help but think, wow, there was a period of time not that long ago where it would have been imperceivable for people to think that there would be an African-American baseball player, or not too long ago that there would be a president who was African-American. And then things change, and generally for the better. So, if you're talking about the bigger issue here and reducing it can be accomplished through rules changes and dealing with it, but eliminating it can only be accomplished by eliminating the repetitive head traumas that these guys sustain.
Gary, thank you for your call this morning. Let's go to next on the phone is Sally calling from Rockland County. Sally, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. I am so thrilled that you're discussing this, but I have a slightly different angle. I have a son who is a competitive gymnast who has sustained quite a few concussions, and in the beginning we didn't really take it so seriously. It was just, he landed on his head and, he just needs to rest. But since then, I know his friends and their parents who have started their kids in sport, really any sport, is they get a test done from a sports doctor of some sort where they're actually measuring their ability to recall, their ability for hand-eye coordination, and then, and more, much more in depth. But then, if there's a possibility of maybe there was a head injury and you're not sure to what degree, then they go to the doctor, they have them retake the test to see, of course it's not the all definitive, but to see if there's a difference. Was there a change in their cognitive functioning? Obviously you don't see the brain. So, a little bit of rest. But the last concussion my son sustained was really rather bad, where it was, okay, bed rest for 2 weeks, and we're going to give your brain time to relax, and no TV, no anything. And then, but we don't know, how far he came, how bad was the injury, and all that. And, 8 years later, he's still, sometimes he's got a foggy memory, sometimes, he's just, so I really think getting children tested, the same as, before any sport in school, they make them have some physical where, basically they're kind of cleared without, the greatest physical in the world, that, in addition to having this cognitive testing at the beginning of learning sports, as well as they should probably also do a cardiogram on all the kids who are going to participate in sports, I think that just gives them a measurable guideline. And that's what I have to say.
All right. Paul, you want to respond?
Yeah, that's interesting. What she's talking about, there is a test out there. It's called the King-Devick test. It's a concussion screening test that the Mayo Clinic has really gotten behind. It's incredibly easy to administer, and it's, in fact, designed for high school coaches to really administer, or gymnastics coaches, anybody, not a medical professional, to administer both before and after athletes sustain any kind of trauma. It's a really simple test where you read numbers off of a card, and it measures your ability to recall them and your timing and your visual recall. So it's an incredibly easy test to administer before and after, which will give you an idea before being a baseline, after being, okay, has there been some kind of concussion or mild TBI episode. So that test does exist, and she's absolutely right. It's very easy to administer and get a baseline for young athletes.
Mm. Sally, thank you very much for joining us. Your patience on the phone. Travel safely, and certainly good luck. Continue with your son, too. Tough situation. Very
thank
tough
you.
Situation, as a matter of fact, too. Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program after our 8 o'clock update this Sunday morning. Ed Randall's Talkin' Baseball follows our 9 o'clock update, as we've been mentioning. Today is Jackie Robinson Day in Major League Baseball. 71 years ago today that Jackie Robinson broke baseball's color barrier. Ed will be sharing some thoughts on that, I'm sure, during his Talkin' Baseball program this morning. And you'll be hearing some things about this topic throughout the day here on WFAN. We're in discussion with Paul Edelstein. He is a personal injury attorney here in New York, and he's joined us for our entire program this morning talking about this topic of CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. We've touched upon, or he has touched upon, TBI, traumatic brain injury, as well in this discussion. I guess the question at this point, Paul, is over the next 6 months to a year, where do you think or where do you see things going with CTE? You've already mentioned potentially what could happen with the outstanding aspect of the case involving the Russian boxer that you're representing. But what do you think is actually going to happen with this topic?
Well, I think you're going to get more. You're going to have more and more discussion about this topic. The more you have cases like Magomed's be in the forefront of the news, the more you have cases like the NFL, you know, players' case, you know, where they brought this federal lawsuit to get recoveries for retired players. The more that becomes in the forefront, the more media attention that's put on it. So our conversation adds to the discussion. And in our society, any time you have a spirited discussion where there may not necessarily be agreement, you usually garner results. So if the discussions continue and the analysis continues and the education continues, then you're going to probably see some change. I mean, one thing that might happen, imagine if you changed one thing. Imagine if every NFL telecast we watched this upcoming season, if every time a player took a head hit and they talked about him going in concussion protocol, if they just changed that word concussion and said, well, he's in the traumatic brain injury protocol right now, because that's what a concussion is. If just that word changed, wouldn't there be some changes in the results? I mean, wouldn't people look at it differently? I think they would. So the more the discussion happens, the more you're going to see changes in terms of rule implementation, safety measures, and certainly post-injury safety measures, which is at the forefront of Mago's case. In other words, if we're going to allow these guys to participate in combat sports like this, let's make it absolutely as safe as possible thereafter. Same as in the NFL. I think the NFL is doing a pretty good job at that. But if you're not going to eliminate it, which obviously we're not going to eliminate NFL right now, and certainly not boxing or MMA, then we've got to take as much steps as we can to protect these athletes. Right now, probably not enough is being done, certainly in boxing and the MMA.
The federal lawsuit brought by the retired NFL players, how much do you think that is going to impact the discussion? Because that, I would think, should bring a real strong focus to this.
I think it already did. For the most part, it's resolved. So you're not going to see, and I think that was wise and probably a strategic choice on behalf of the NFL.
Right.
Do you really want to see this played out in a courtroom?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to see Mago's case played out in a courtroom because we think it'll bring the issue of his post-fight treatment into the forefront. Let's get it out in the open, in the public realm, where people could hear what happened and then weigh in. The NFL and that lawsuit, I'm glad it was settled for these players that are retired that need to tap into this fund, to get care that they're going to need. But to some degree, it'll go by the wayside. You know, it'll be yesterday's news. Because it's not going to be in the forefront. You're not going to have a trial. And that, you know, to some degree, that's why litigants and why we, you know, I believe in what I do, and I think guys that do what I do believe it also, that we can effectuate change by bringing this into the forefront.
Mm.
Hopefully there's not another lawsuit. I mean, do you really want to deal with guys like me after the fact coming in and saying, hey, you know, here's the problem? Or do you want to deal with it before something happens and say, here's what we're going to do to try to prevent something from happening to somebody? Obviously, that's the better choice.
Do you get frustrated doing this?
No, I love what I do because I think I'm doing some good not only for my clients but for people that aren't even my clients. And, you know, and I understand what clients and their families go through who have traumatic brain injuries. So if I can prevent one of those things from happening to somebody in the future, I've done something far greater, you know, than I ever thought when I started as a lawyer.
Mm.
So I don't get frustrated by it. I love it.
Okay.
And I want to represent these people, and I want to effectuate change if I can, which is why anyone that calls me like you that wants to talk about this, I'm happy to do it. It's great. Thank God we have guys like you in the media, because without the media putting a spotlight on this, there's usually not change.
What can and what role do you see, quote-unquote, the public playing on this topic over the next year?
They play the biggest role, because the public voicing complaints or support for one side or the other is one thing. Economic change is usually what spurs things to change, right? So if you have a billion-dollar lawsuit like the NFL had to deal with, or a multi-million-dollar lawsuit like MAGO. So MAGO's multi-million-dollar lawsuit against the New York State Athletic Commission effectuated change in their rules and regulations, and hopefully we'll do that in the future. The billion-dollar lawsuit in the NFL effectuated change. So the economic component to a lawsuit made something happen. The public's economic contribution and component can make a bigger change. If there was an economic effect on the NFL, so people have asked me, I've been on a lot of podcasts, and they've asked me, are ratings down because of CTE? Well, there's no way to really know that, right? But if that were the case, if they were losing money, the NFL or any professional corporation or outfit, any business that's losing money is going to say, well, what are we going to do to change this? So if the NFL is losing money because people are tuning off or tuning out because of brain injury, then they'll say, well, we got to do something about it. So the public's contribution to the economic component here is huge. If that changes, you're going to see big change.
And the question that I don't think I've asked you in the entire time that we've been talking, is there an online resource that you could direct people to who are interested in perhaps finding out more about this topic or finding out more about MAGO's law, your efforts?
Well, you know, MAGO's law is not codified anywhere, so it's like, you know, go to, you can just read it from the media accounts of it. But the MAGO's law is a small component of what we're talking about,
right,
which is really TBI. There is so much incredible information about traumatic brain injury and how people can make contributions to research for traumatic brain injury and support people that have sustained traumatic brain injury. That is so readily available. I don't just want to, like, throw something out there. I mean, there's charitable organizations, there's educational organizations, there's just a ton out there for anybody that wants access to it. You know what the problem is? If you don't read this stuff, you're not going to understand. Some people don't want to read it. Just like, I guess, people didn't want to learn about the negative consequences of cigarettes. Well, close your eyes and you're not going to know about it. So if you want to learn about this, you know, it's the information is just readily available to everybody.
Paul, I want to thank you very much for being kind with your time, sharing your thoughts and your passion with the work that you are doing, too. Certainly good luck with your efforts. Thank you very much for joining us on our
program. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Alrighty. After our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge program on The Fan. And you can listen to WFAN anytime, anywhere. Simply download the radio.com app and favorite us today. If you have Alexa, and who doesn't, just say, play WFAN Sports Radio 101.9 or play WFAN Sports Radio 66, and you'll be locked into The Fan. And that's something you want to do not only for the Sports Edge program, but especially for that Talkin' Baseball show. Ed Randall will be along with that. We will see you special program next Sunday morning. Our thanks to Connor at the controls. Have a great day, everybody.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them. And designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at canva.com.